Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
This is the RTC Weekly Download, where we enjoy some old-time radio, approximately 1 hour of it every week. Great old stuff from the past. We're going to have a little bit of news here to start off with. This is kind of a news program of sorts where they reenacted important things in the news for the radio audience, an early concept for broadcasting. It's called The March of Time, and the title is We Must Be Prepared to Destroy Any Power That Would Dare to Attack Us. That's one of the longer titles. It's from 1938. In about 30 minutes, we'll be back with Judy Canova and Judy and the Saxophone from 1945. Enjoy.
The March of Time. Life, the magazine of pictures, is edited to show intelligent American families the news of the week and the ways of the world's people. Life is edited for the families of men like Thomas E. Dewey, famed record-smashing district attorney of New York City. Says Mr. Dewey,
life is not only entertaining and stimulating, life is unbiased and unafraid in presenting important news. It is a great combination of courage and color in picturing American life.
Life is edited for the families of men like Joseph P. Kennedy, newly appointed United States Ambassador to Great Britain. Says Ambassador Kennedy,
life is real and a good deal more than earnest in its vigorous, unbiased presentation of the news. It's marvelous. I look forward to reading it every week.
And it is because life goes into the homes of families like these, today nearly 2 million of the best American families, that many advertisers are predicting that Life, before long, will be not only the most read magazine in the country, but the leading advertising medium.
The new issue of Life is on sale at newsstands tomorrow, and more copies of Life are now being sold on U.S. newsstands each month than of any other magazine. Go to your news dealer. He will just have received his copy. And if you don't see Life, we suggest you ask for it.
Tonight, Life, the weekly magazine of pictures, joins Time, the weekly news magazine, in presenting by radio the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the week.
From the March of Time. The Philippine Islands. This week in Manila comes the climax of a story which begins on a corner of the Calamba Sugar Estate, bordering the Manila Golf Course, where Filipino washerwoman Dominga Capati is scrubbing clothes as a caddy approaches her.
Hey! Hey! Did you see a golf ball come out this way?
What? Oh, that little white ball he'll run over there?
Yes. Did you see?
No, I did not. And if you ask me, a sensible people ought to find something better to do with their time than walk around in the hot sun. Hit the ball. Go look for it. Hit it again. Foolishness.
Easy to talk with when you've never tried it.
Try it? But if I did, I would hit it harder than those big fat men. Those women with their little thin arms.
You could not even hit the ball.
Oh, you think so, huh? All right. Just put a ball down on the ground there. Go ahead. Put the ball down on the ground. Now, give me one of those sticks. Now, stand back out of my way. There! Now get along and don't bother me. I've got work to do.
Hey, wait. Let me see you do that again.
Okay.
250 yards. Here, try another.
Two years ago, Husky Dominga Capati swung her first golf club, hit her first golf ball. This week, in the roster of entries in the Manila Women's Open Golf Tournament,
Capati, Dominga, age 25, nationality, Philippine, club affiliations, none, occupation, washerwoman.
The opening day of the tournament.
Up to the first tee steps Dominga Capati, only native Philippine entry in the match. She tees up her ball, looks once down the fairway, swings.
The second day.
A cheering crowd is following Dominga Capati.
two strokes ahead of the field as she tees up for her 35th hole.
The final day.
Dominga Capati is four strokes ahead of her nearest competitor, socialite Jean Morgan, as she prepares to putt on the 72nd and final hole of the tournament.
Quiet, please. Quiet for Senorita Capati.
This week, new Open Golf champion of the Philippine Islands is washerwoman Dominga Capati, finishing five strokes ahead of her nearest rival. The first Filipino ever to win a golf championship. And at week's end, back at her washboard, says champion Capati,
I get driving muscles scrubbing up and down like this. And my wrist wringing out to close like this. And the putting, well, that just seemed to come natural.
1938 marches on. The USA, this week of 1938.
There is a new situation at sea which our nation can no longer ignore. That new situation involves the actions of three naval powers, Germany, Italy, and Japan. Against that new situation, the United States must be prepared with a navy second to none.
This week in Washington, testifying on behalf of the U.S. Navy, a gray-haired scholarly admiral sits in the witness chair before a House committee. He is William D. Lay, chief of operations of all the U.S. fleets. This week, putting the Navy on record for the first time in 22 years as naming a potential enemy of the United States on the high seas. In the hushed committee room, congressmen lean forward as committee members question the admiral.
Admiral Leahy, are you suggesting that the United States abrogate the 1936 London Naval Treaty?
The 1930 treaty allowed the United States and Great Britain five ships each to every three that Japan built. Japan, however, is reported to have exceeded the limit of the treaty of 1936.
So we must be armed 5-3 against Japan. Does it take five Americans to lick three Japs?
That, sir, is the first time I have heard such an expression.
Would you risk a fight with an equal Japanese navy?
I would be only too happy to take that chance.
Admiral Leahy, isn't there some sort of an understanding between the United States Navy and Great Britain?
Certainly not.
How does it happen that Captain Royal Ingersoll, chief of our Navy's War Council, has been carrying on consultations with the British Admiralty?
Mr. Chairman, I object to that question.
Oh, let him answer. Well, Admiral Leahy?
Gentlemen, I cannot answer that question at a public hearing. Its answer involves a matter of vital importance to the interests and defense of the United States.
But 24 hours after Admiral Leahy's refusal to answer the question of the U.S. Navy's secret business with the British Admiralty, from the office of Secretary of State Cordell Hull is issued a terse announcement.
After a long consultation, the government of the United States, together with the governments of Great Britain and France, has approached the Japanese government with a request for information regarding the Japanese naval building program. If no reply is received by February 20th, the United States, Great Britain, and France will consider themselves free to adopt naval armament plans without limitation.
Promptly on the floor of the United States Senate,
Mr. President, the Chief Admiral of the United States Navy speaks of Japan, Italy, and Germany as an alliance of enemy powers. We have seen our State Department act as if in alliance with Great Britain and France. I demand to know the meaning of this.
The Senator is jumping to conclusions, and I can assure the Senator on the word of the Secretary of State that we have not entered an alliance or combination of any kind with any foreign power.
Mr. President.
Senator from Idaho.
The important thing is that it looks as if we were allying ourselves against an enemy. And when other nations see that we are building a navy, the like of which has never been seen in time of peace, they can draw but one conclusion. These things cannot be whistled down the wind. These things lead to war.
Mr. President, the governments of Japan, Germany, and Italy are each and every one embarked on wars of conquest. If the democracies act together, there is nothing strange about it. As for the United States, we must be prepared without alliance to destroy any power that dares to attack us.
This week, no reply has come from the Japanese government to the arms ultimatum of the world's democracies. But unofficially, well knowing Japan's plans for 43,000 ton ships with 18-inch guns, the U.S., as of this week of 1938, has officially entered the world's armament race for the first time since the World War, with the greatest sustained naval building program in U.S. history. And this week, official Washington studies new results of the American Institute of Public Opinion's nationwide poll.
Tabulations received in our recent survey indicate that the American people are by overwhelming majority against war and against foreign alliances. Yet a majority of 74% of the American people favor a navy second to none.
Time marches on. On a morning a fortnight ago in the slum section of Birmingham, Alabama, a lanky, bareheaded Negro youth, a canvas under his arm, hurries into the open door of a small shanty.
Hey, Mom, where are you?
Coming, son. I'm coming.
Oh, where are my paintbrushes? What'd you do with them?
Dan, Gustus, what's all the excitement about? What do you want with them brushes again?
You remember this picture I done called Morning?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to enter it in that competition they have them for young artists.
You going to do what?
That's right. Miss Speed had my picture hanging in the bookstore downtown. She said everybody liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who said I should put my picture in the contest? Crawford Gillis.
Who's he?
Why, he's a big artist, Ma.
Augustus, that there exhibition is for white folks.
Oh, Ma, that don't matter. Not in something like painting.
Son, them white folks ain't gonna hang up a colored boy's picture. You know that.
Well, look at Paul Robeson, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and Bill Robinson. Nobody cares what color they are. Or get my paints, Ma. I got work to do.
To Mr. Augustus Williams, dear sir, your entry number 230, titled Morning, has been accepted by the Women's Civic Club as a part of the Birmingham Division of the International Exhibition of Young Artists. The exhibition open to the public will be held at the Birmingham Public Library.
Promptly hung in Birmingham's public library is the picture Morning, landscape watercolor by young Negro Augustus Williams. Promptly next morning, off to see his picture hanging on exhibition, goes artist Williams. Returns an hour later to his home.
Well, Augustus, what did the folks say about your picture?
They liked it, Mom.
Is it got a lot of pictures hanging up there?
Not so many.
How'd yours look? Look good against the rest?
I guess so.
Augustus, what happened when you got there?
Nothing, Mom. The guard just said niggers weren't allowed. That's all.
This week, as the Birmingham Public Library enforces the old Jim Crow law of the South, refuses to permit Augustus Williams to see his own entry on exhibit, 15 Southern artists take up the cudgels for the young Negro painter. Letters pour into Birmingham's public library, some protesting that a Negro's picture was exhibited, most protesting that Jim Crow ruling. But comments librarian Lila Mae Chapman.
I didn't even know Augustus Williams had a picture on exhibition in our gallery. But we never have permitted Negroes to enter our library, and I don't see what we can do about it now.
1938 marches on. New York City.
The small businessmen of this country are going to Washington and make history. We're going to get a hearing. We're going to tell the president what's what. We're going to punch and punch hard, holler and holler like hell.
Such this week is the battle cry of little clothing manufacturer Henry Sachs, one of 800 delegates to a conference of the nation's little businessmen, convening at the personal invitation of small business number one champion, Franklin D. Roosevelt. declares little oil man, Alfred Mossman Landon.
Those little fellows can give the president some good advice. They are the backbone of the nation.
Auger's Republican news pundit, Mark Sullivan.
Mr. Roosevelt is at last looking for useful guidance.
Herbert Clark Hoover.
Small businessmen of the nation will bring to Washington that element of common sense and stability so desperately needed at the present time.
This week in Washington, on the platform of the Department of Commerce Auditorium, benignly beaming Secretary of Commerce Daniel Roper welcomes the delegates to the Conference of Little Businessmen.
I am proud to stand before this splendid group of American citizens. It is a privilege indeed to see with what genuine enthusiasm you have come together to offer your plans and advice. It is indeed an occasion which I shall long treasure among...
Louder! Louder! I can't hear you in the back.
I'm doing my best, but will you take your seat, please?
No, we won't take our seat. We came to be heard, not to listen.
Please, will you listen to me? I'm not going to make a speech. I merely want to suggest...
I can't hear you!
Down in front!
This is but down in
take
the
your seats.
We haven't had a prayer.
It's a monopoly!
Second day of the Little Business Conference.
Gentlemen, on behalf of the delegation from New York, I request that we get on with this day's business.
Who gave you the right to talk for New York?
What? Who gave New York a right to talk?
What?
New York thinks the whole United States.
Brooklyn! Brooklyn! Move the meeting to Brooklyn!
Brooklyn! New York!
Brooklyn!
Third day of the Little Business Conference.
Mr. Chairman!
Order! Order! Sergeant at arms, throw that man out!
Free speech! Free speech! Let go of me! I demand a group of my civil liberty! I demand a new home! I demand a new home!
But at week's end, Little Business gets down to serious business. Presents to Franklin Roosevelt its official 23-point program. Number 1 point in the program of Little Business.
Repeal of the corporate surplus tax.
Number 2 point.
Amendment of the Wagner Labor Relations Act.
Number 3 point.
Cheaper loans to small business for new plant and equipment.
Other points on the Little Business program. Federal economy. Social reform. Government hands-off business, big and small. And at week's end, comments New York Times correspondent Arthur Kroc.
The week had plenty of little laughs at the expense of little business. But the big laughs were on the big men who've been beating the drum for the little men. And the biggest laugh was on the big man who invited the little men to Washington, Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Time marches on. Alcatraz Island. In the most grim and formidable of U.S. penitentiaries, one night this week, two guards approach the entrance to the cell block, unlock and throw the heavy bolts, roll back the massive steel door, pause a moment on the threshold, then begin to walk slowly down the dimly lighted corridor towards the cell, which for 5 years has been occupied by prisoner number 85, Scarface Alphonse Capone.
Everyone's quiet except him.
Yeah, sounds cheerful enough.
I guess his troubles are over.
Number 85. Here we are.
All right, Capone. Gotta come along with us now.
Yeah, you better quit singing, fella. Keep the others awake.
Nice song, huh?
Yeah. Come along now.
Come with you?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, but wait a minute.
What's the trouble?
My bed. I gotta finish making my bed.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
I made it as good as I could, but there's always a wrinkle in it. I don't know.
Come on, Al. We'll send a guy down to fix your bed.
Okay. But I ought to smooth it out a little. Don't you think I ought to before I go?
Twenty years ago, a swart, stocky Italian boy came out of Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and learned how to use a submachine gun on Chicago's South Side. Rode in an armored car, shot craps with $1,000 bills, sent floral tributes worth a fortune to the funerals of his victims, became the hero of short stories, movies, plays, the number one beer baron and big shot of the Prohibition era. This week, with eligibility for parole only 10 months away, into the hospital record at Alcatraz Prison goes the entry...
Number 85, Alphonse Capone, hallucinations and mental collapse.
Time marches on. Berlin, Germany. At 10 o'clock one night this week, over every radio in every home in Nazi Germany...
People of the Third German Reich, you are ordered to stand by your radios for important announcements concerning the government. Every German must give these announcements his complete attention. By order of the Führer, Adolf Hitler.
Such is the first hint to come to the German people of the events of a momentous week in Nazi German history. A week which brings to a climax the 5 years of growing friction between the Nazi political party of Adolf Hitler and old-line conservatives of the German army and aristocracy. A week which begins when into the private chancellery office of Adolf Hitler walk 6 Reichswehr generals, led by Chief of Staff Ludwig Beck and bemonocled Prussian Field Commander Werner von Frisch.
We have come to you on certain grave matters which concern not only the army, but all Germany, Reichsführer.
Of course, gentlemen.
The aid we have been giving to General Franco in Spain, right?
Gentlemen, General Franco is combating the menace of Bolshevism, the greatest menace in the world today.
Reichsführer, we have much to lose in Spain, nothing to gain. We have drained the resources of the German army to help a doubtful cause. It is time to call a halt.
Is this the feeling of the army?
It is the feeling, Reichsführer, not only of the army, of your ambassador to Austria, von Papen, your foreign minister, von Arad, of many of the highest men in the Third Reich.
So, von Papen, Neurath, I see.
The alliance with Italy. Again, we feel it is of doubtful value. And the persecutions of the church. In the past, the German people have fought and have suffered with faith in God. Germany cannot abandon that faith now.
We trust, Reichsführer, that some action may be taken on these matters as soon as possible.
And if such action does not meet with my approval?
In view of the feelings of the army, Reichsführer, we have every confidence that your approval will be granted.
One hour later comes the announcement that one of the rare meetings of Germany's parliament has been canceled. Throughout the night in Berlin embassies and diplomatic circles, through the offices of the great foreign press services, goes the word of a political crisis in the Third German Reich. Over all Germany descends a blank censorship of press and radio. Morning at a newsstand in the heart of Berlin.
The London Times, please.
Here you are.
Have the Austrian papers come in yet?
No, not yet.
Swiss papers?
Not yet.
Stand aside, please.
What is it, officer?
You will have to close your stand temporarily.
Close my stand?
Until we have confiscated your foreign newspapers. All foreign newspapers confiscated. Orders of the government.
All through the following night, lights blaze at the Chancellery. Chief of Police Heinrich Himmler comes and goes. 3 o'clock the next morning, the German embassy in Vienna, post of conservative aristocratic Franz von Papen.
Hello?
Berlin calling, Your Excellency. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello? Papen, this is Ribbentrop.
Oh, yes.
You are ordered to return to Berlin at once, Herr von Papen.
Return to Berlin? Yeah, but Ribbentrop... I can do that only on the orders of the foreign minister.
I have just been appointed foreign minister by the Führer.
Yeah, but I...
You are hereby relieved of your post as ambassador to Austria, Herr von Papen. You will return to Berlin at once.
With the recall of Franz von Papen from Vienna, in the next 24 hours, recalled from Rome as Ambassador Ulrich von Hassel, recalled from Tokyo as Herbert von Dirksen. Late next night at the Berlin home of conservative army commander-in-chief, Werner von Fritsch.
Well, what is it?
I wish to see General von Fritsch.
I'm very sorry, but the general has already retired for tonight.
There's his room.
Down the hall on the right, but...
It's all right. Official business.
But you can't...
I tell you, it's official business.
Hello. Who is it?
Heinrich Himmler, Chief of Secret Police.
Oh, yes, Herr Himmler. Is there some word?
General von Fritsch, by order of the Führer, I place you under arrest. You will remain here in quarters until further orders.
So at week's end, with the arrest of Werner von Fritsch, conclude 6 days of virtual rebellion of conservative army officers against the authority of Adolf Hitler. Then the radio silence, which has blanketed all Germany, is finally broken by Minister of Propaganda, Paul Joseph Goebbels.
People of Germany, by order of Chancellor Adolf Hitler, the resignations of Defense Minister Field Marshal von Blomberg, of Army Commander in Chief General von Fritsch, of Foreign Minister Baron von Neurath, have been accepted. Foreign ambassadors to Rome, Vienna, and Tokyo have been recalled. The following changes in the economic ministry will become effective as of tonight.
In 6 days this week, Adolf Hitler completes a swift, secret purge of approximately 180 rebellious conservatives of the German army and diplomatic corps. In 1934, Adolf Hitler carried out an equally swift but bloody coup, which saw the execution of hundreds of his own Nazi party members. A purge followed 1 month later by the assassination of Austrian Chancellor Engelbert Dollfuss by Nazi agents. Followed 11 months later by the abrogation of the Versailles Treaty Clauses, which launched Germany on her program of rearmament. This week, whether the purge of 1938 presages new German adventures in Austria, in Czechoslovakia, in Spain, is known only to the Führer. And with rumors tonight of open revolt among officers and men of Berlin's crack Prussian regiments, only hint of the future course of German destinies is the statement to his people of Adolf Hitler.
Henceforth, I personally will exercise direct command of the entire armed establishment of the Third German Reich.
Time marches on. The pageant of the week's news. Memorable scenes from the news of the world you have followed tonight on the March of Time. It is this great news pageant of the world that the magazine Life is unfolding every week before the eyes of its readers in pictures.
Stories and pictures from the week's news front.
Only pictures could reproduce the now historic clash of personalities at the Washington Conference of Little Businessmen, where in two tempestuous days, the workings of pure democracy managed to produce a surprisingly forceful program. And only pictures could do justice to what is perhaps the greatest contrast in the week's news to the earnest brawling of America's little businessmen. The opening of Canada's Parliament by her Governor General, in all its ancient pomp and pageantry.
Life catches the news in the camera's eye.
In Life, you eyewitness the great murder trial of 1938, now in progress at Los Angeles, to which all Hollywood comes to watch the real life drama of a man fighting for his life. In Life, you watch all Egypt celebrate the marriage of its young king to his most beautiful subject. And in Life, you watch Japan's sacred Buddhist service of thanksgiving for the fall of Nanking.
Life takes you abroad.
In Life this week, you will see the almost unbelievable details of Europe's new world war of the airwaves. A war between fascism and democracy, in which the weapons are words and the battlefields extend to this country and to South America.
Life goes to the movies.
Life shows you what Hollywood is doing to make over the beautiful Robert Taylor into a he-man for masculine consumption.
And most timely and significant of all...
Life shows you the life and death of Abraham Lincoln. In a remarkable collection of 30 photographs, Life recreates a living record of the titanic struggle and tragic death of America's great president. You will be amazed, as Life was amazed, that such excellent photographs were taken so long ago. And in them, Life shows you Lincoln's second presidential campaign and inauguration, his meeting with McClellan at Antietam, making his deathless speech at Gettysburg, and the nation in mourning at his death. Every American man and woman and every growing American child will want to see these historic news photographs of Abraham Lincoln and his contemporaries, published in Life tomorrow, on the eve of the nation's celebration of his birthday on Saturday.
These are but a few of the week's news stories, which Life's new issue covers in words and pictures.
Be sure of getting a copy.
The Judy Canova Show, brought to you each week by the Colgate Palmolive Tea Company, makers of Palmolive soap and Colgate tooth powder. Ma, Palm Olive Soap, your beauty hope, and Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet present the Judy Canova Show with Mel Blanc, Ruby Dandridge, Verna Felton, Joe Kearns, the Sportsman, Opie Cates and his orchestra, and starring Judy Canova.
If it ain't bills, it's tax. If it ain't waves, it's quack. If it ain't skirts, it's quack. Gotta be this or that. If it ain't steer, it's doggy. If it ain't pipe, it's stogie. If it ain't baby, it's bogey. Gotta be this or that. Who can it be? If it ain't me, I know it's not your brother. Can't you see it's gotta be just one way or the other? Tell me what I must know. If you don't like, I'll go. If it ain't yes, it's no. Gotta be this or that. Now listen here, Mac. I'm really in demand. Men asking for my hand. So you just understand. It's gotta be this or that. I ain't gonna sit and wait. Even I had a date in 1928. So it's gotta be this or that. Well, I met one soldier from the South Pacific. He was cute, kind of tall and lanky. And he said I reminded him of lovely native girls he'd seen. And hey, what is a you bangy, huh? So just make up your mind. Cause if you don't, you'll buy. I ain't the patient kind. And you're liable to come in contact with a baseball bat. So it's gotta be this or that.
Well, Judy has decided to augment her vocal talents by becoming a musician, and as our scene opens, she's practicing on the saxophone.
Geranium. Oh, geranium. Geranium!
Yes, Miss Judy?
Come over here. Take those earmuffs off.
I'm coming, honey.
How can you hear with those earmuffs on?
I can't.
Hey, what do you think of my playing? Doesn't my music send you?
Oh, yes, it sends me all right, but that ain't the way I like to travel.
Well, I learned a new number. Listen to this.
Okay. Golly, Miss Judy, what number was that?
Song of India by Rimsky-Korsakov.
Rimsky-Korsakov? Well, that sounded flat.
Well, sure it's flat. Korsakov is driving in on the Rimsky.
Oh. Hey, Miss Judy, you got your mouth stuck in that saxophone. Here, I'll help you.
That settles it. That's the last time I'll ever play the saxophone while I'm chewing bubble gum. Say, Geranium, did you ever play a musical instrument?
Oh, yeah, honey, I used to play the tuba. I put everything I had into that tuba.
You did?
Yeah, and with my shape, I could just about make it.
Aggie, how'd you like my saxophone solo?
Well, Judy, I can't say much for your playing. Why must you always play swing? I'm fed up with popular music.
Well, sure, Aunt Aggie, after I play it, it ain't popular.
Of course, I like some modern conductors, such as Paul Whiteman and Kostelanitz. Whom do you like?
Well, I kind of lean toward Harry James, but Betty Grable keeps pushing me away.
Ah, but the old masters will live forever.
Yep. After all, where would music be today if Wagner didn't give a wag, Beethoven didn't give a beat, and Damrosch didn't give
Judy.
A...
Judy!
You thought I was going to cuss and say darn, didn't you? Well, this ain't getting my practicing done.
Hey, look, Miss Judy. That man next door is opening his window and waving at you.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Maxwell. Did you hear me playing?
Indeed, I did. Do you know Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe?
Yeah. Do you want me to play it?
No, I want you to take it.
Oh, don't pay him no mind, Miss Judy. He's just old meanie.
Yeah, I know it.
He so mean he uses barbed wire for a clothesline so the birds can't sit down. Poor little old birds feel so sorry for him to stand around
Judy,
twiddling the feathers.
Hey, Miss Judy.
What is
any time for toodle time on the radio?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I nearly forgot my favorite program. Turn it on, Geranium.
Yes, ma'am.
The Toodle Saxophone Hour is on the air.
Toodle saxophones are dandy built to fit your mouth and snoot. Buy a horn and keep it handy when you're going on a toot. A toot, toot, toot.
Oh, ooh. Hello, everybody. This is Hot Lips Dan, your saxophone man. Are you a social outcast? Do you sit home alone?
Yeah, night after night.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Well, then, take our saxophone course and be the life of the party. If after six lessons you don't play the saxophone beautifully, I'll kiss a pig.
Shucks, I've had six lessons. I wonder how I'm doing.
Okay, lady, you win!
Turn that darn thing off, Geranium.
Yes, ma'am.
Doggone it. Seems like every time I turn the radio on, some jughead sticks his tater trap into the microphone and says...
Pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita.
Oh, hello, Pedro. How do you like the way I play the saxophone?
Well, Senorita, I like the way you play it, but I don't like the way you hold it up to your mouth.
Why?
Because that is what makes your music come out. Senorita, do you play Shostakovich, Tchaikovsky, or Rachmaninoff?
Who?
Shostakovich, Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff.
Now, once more, Pedro, to wash the soap off. You know something, Mr. Maxwell don't like my playing neither. I asked him what he thought of my execution, and he said he was in favor of it.
Senorita, if I was here, he wouldn't talk that way. I fought in the Golden Gloves.
In the Golden Gloves? How'd you come out?
Feet first. I was in the heavyweight division of the Golden Gloves.
But, Pedro, you're not heavy enough.
Oh, Senorita, my Golden Gloves had lead in them. But you know, I won three fights in a row. I fought Kid Gonzalez, Kid Ramirez, Kid Garcia, and then I lost.
What happened?
They stopped giving me kids and made me fight a man. But the biggest moment of my career was when I fought Joe Louis. Boy, did I have him frightened.
You had Joe Louis frightened?
See, he thought he killed me. Well, Senorita, I will go now. Buenas tardes.
And a hot toddy to you too, Pedro.
Case is clarinet and his orchestra playing in Acapulco.
Use Colgate toothpowder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate toothpowder.
Remember this message from Colgate toothpowder. When the one you've a crush on gives you the brush off, quickly ask yourself, could I have a little breath of trouble? For that breath of trouble, I mean unpleasing breath, has cooled many a romance. Yes, it's happened to thousands without their knowing. So don't you run the risk. Follow the Colgate tooth powder routine. Brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. For Colgate tooth powder cleans your breath as it cleans your teeth. Because scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, Colgate tooth powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. What's more, no dentifrice at any price cleans your teeth more quickly and thoroughly than Colgate tooth powder. Remember to buy it first thing. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder.
Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
Miss Judy, there's a note from Mr. Maxwell, the man next door.
Let's see what it says. Oh, it says he's coming over to tighten a part of my saxophone so I can't play so loud.
Yeah, well, what part's he going to tighten?
The strap around my neck. But I'll show him. I'm going to be a great musician.
Yeah, honey. Maybe someday you'll even play at Carnegie Hall or the Metropolitan.
Pardon me, Miss Canova.
Yes, mister?
I heard you playing the saxophone, and I've come to sign you up.
Oh, are you from the Metropolitan?
No, I'm from Prudential.
Hey, I better start my practicing again. Oh, gee, that wasn't very good. I better run over it again.
Put it out in the street and we'll all run over it.
Geranium, I told you we're going to have trouble with that man.
Senorita, I don't like our neighbor, Mr. Maxwell.
Pedro, if you don't like him, why were you playing marbles with his kids?
Well, we wasn't playing marbles. I had a fight with Mr. Maxwell, and his kids was helping me pick up my teeth.
Well, how did the fight start?
Mr. Maxwell dropped a bunch of leaves on my head.
Oh, now, Pedro, how could a bunch of leaves hurt you?
It was the leaves out of his dining room table.
If Mr. Maxwell ever saw my boyfriend Pomeroy, he wouldn't bother.
That's right, Geranium. Pomeroy is big, isn't he?
Oh, yes, and he's the original Mr. 5x5. Well, Pomeroy is the only man in the army who has to fall out in a column of threes. Oh, that's doorbell. I'll answer.
Who is it, Geranium?
That Mrs. Frost. The town of Bonfire is here to see Miss Judy.
Well, show him in.
Howdy, Count.
Ah, Judy!
I kissed you as fast as I could. My heart zoomed into the sky, my brain began to spin, and I flew to you on the wings of love.
Yes, Count, you better straighten up and fly right here.
I heard about your troubles from your Aunt Agatha. Ah, what a stew you are in. What is the trouble with your neighbor?
Well, it started like this, Count. What do you think of it, Count?
Oh, it is very good, Sherry, but I think you have a little too much fortissimo in your moderato.
Shucks, it's just this tight dress I'm wearing. Listen to this, Count.
Ah, ma petite. Oh, little pigeon. Ah, Sherry.
Ah, shut up!
A cowardly cad. I will fight him a duel.
Atta boy, Count. Fight him a duel at 20 paces and you choose the weapon.
Oh, no. I will let him choose the weapons. I will choose the number of paces.
Yeah, I can just see the headlines now. Man in California fights duel with Count in South America.
Oh, my buddy, that is not true. I would gladly face death for you.
Then go over and face that man.
But, Cherie, that man is not dead. Cherie, that man has insulted you, and this I cannot stand. I simply cannot stand.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to lie down.
Oh, Miss Judy.
What is it, Geranium?
Oh, it's that Mr. Maxwell. He's done ruined our vegetables.
Ruined our vegetables? How?
Well, he has a clay pigeon that he crossed with a mud hen, and is laying bricks all over our victory garden.
That settles it. Julie, I can't stand any more of this. We're going to sell this house. I'm going to call Mr. Goff, my real estate broker, right now.
Well, that's okay with me, Aunt Aggie. I'll write an ad for the newspapers, too. Let me see now. 18-room house with 4 square bathtubs.
Judy, will mentioning square bathtubs help sell the house?
Why, sure, that'll appeal to people. When you take a bath in a square bathtub, you can't leave a ring.
Baby, Judy, if we get a new house, I hope we don't get one with those modern gadgets.
Such as what, Geranium?
Well, for one thing, I don't like those automatic fire sprinklers that turn on if a room gets too hot.
Why not?
Well, one night, my boyfriend Pomeroy kissed me in the kitchen, and before we knew it, we were swimming in 3 feet of water.
Hey, wait a minute. Has anybody seen Judy?
Yeah, we saw her. She was in a little jukebox joint.
Beside the record machine stood Judy Canova, so mad she was seeing red. She banged on the counter till the owner came over, and this is what Judy said.
I come here from far up the mountain. Sweet, pretty music to hear. Put my nickel in the slot and just listen what I got. Give me back my nickel. We don't like that stuff up the mountain. Ain't fit for no human ear. I've heard beautifuler notes come from pigs and nanny goats. Give me back my nickel. Grandpappy warned me about your city jive. Give me back my nickel or my six shooter's only going to shoot five. I must return to the mountain. Hi-da-lay-doo. No more shall I tarry here. Please refund my 5 cent piece or I'll call the state police. Give me back my Supreme Court. I must return to the mountain. Idle-a-dee-dee-doo. No more shall I tarry here. Anyone that likes that jazz should be sent to Alcatraz. Give me back my nickel.
Remember, doctors prove Palmolive's beauty results. It's true. Doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring 2 out of 3 women a more beautiful complexion in just 14 days. And this plan was tested on women with all types of skin.
Even women with dry skin, oily skin, rough skin, women as old as 50, even women whose skin wasn't clear.
Yes, 36 doctors, leading skin specialists, have proved the 14-day Palmolive plan improves all types of skin. Yes, brings fresher, brighter, younger-looking complexions. Start your 14-day Palmolive plan now. It's as simple as 1, 2, 3. Here's all you do. 1.
Wash your face with Palmolive soap.
2.
Then massage your face for 60 seconds with Palmolive soft, lovely lather. You see, 1 full minute of this cleansing massage brings your skin Palmolive's full, beautifying effect.
3.
Then rinse. Do this just 3 times a day for 14 days.
And that's all. Remember, doctors proved this beauty plan with Palmolive soap brought 2 out of 3 of all women tested a more beautiful complexion in just 14 days, no matter what beauty care they used before. So get Palmolive soap, See what Palmolive can do for your own complexion in only 14 days.
And for tub or shower, for loveliness all over, get the new big thrifty bath size Palmolive.
Well, Aunt Aggie, do you think my saxophone playing is improved?
Well, frankly, Judy, the timbre of your vibrato proves your embouchure is bad. You haven't enough allegro in your pizzicato, and you don't sustain your crescendo.
Now, what does that mean in plain American?
In plain American, Judy, you ain't got no schmaltz.
You mean to tell me that I'm a square?
Well, let's say you're a little on the icky side.
Oh, shucks. Now, let's be fair about this thing, Aunt Aggie. You ain't no Bobby Soxer yourself.
Well, I may never have swooned at Frankie Sinatra, but there have been times when I've felt a little faint.
Thank you, Radio.
Judy.
Do you like Frankie Sinatra singing?
Oh, yes, honey. Mr. Sinatra's singing really sends me.
Sinatra sends you?
Oh, yes, ma'am. He may have to make two trips, but he sends me.
Good morning, ladies. I have wonderful news.
Oh, it's Mr. Goff, my real estate broker. Have you sold the house?
Why, yes, I sold it this morning, and tomorrow we go to escrow.
Escrow? Gee, that's swell. Is that anywhere near Pismo Beach?
No.
I'll swim myself, don't
you? Whether you swim or not, we'll get away from that terrible neighbor. Have you lined us up another place?
Oh, I've not only lined one up, I've bought it for you.
Golly, Mr. Goff, I sure hope it ain't one of those small Hollywood apartments.
You do? Why?
Well, them Hollywood apartments are so small, when you close the bedroom door, the doorknob gets in bed with you. And you know them brass doorknobs on a cold night. And you know how hard it is to buy woolies these days. Have you tried to buy woolies?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact.
Well, I have, I'm telling
well,
you.
Well, you know, I had lined up for you.
Oh, you
but,
did?
Yes, there's something mysterious about it. I went to the OPA, but they referred me to the FBI.
Well, what house was that?
The house on 92nd Street. But don't worry about the house I did buy for you. I'm
that
sure you like
moved,
it.
That house moved, didn't it? That house on
92nd.
Well, now that we've sold the house, I can play my saxophone.
Open up in there. I can't stand it any longer.
Oh, why, Mr. Maxwell. Say, I thought you were a younger man, but you got white sideburns.
These aren't sideburns. I've got cotton stuff in my ears.
Yeah, mighty poor grade of cotton. There's some boll weevils crawling down your chin. What do you mean busting in like this, anyhow?
It's that saxophone. Can't you play any other instrument?
Well, I can play the flit.
Flit? Don't you mean flute?
No, when I play, I spray. Yeah, I don't kill no flies, but it sure can murder the bee.
There's liable to be murder, all right. I'm telling you that if you think... Say, what am I mad about? I forgot what I came over here to tell you. I just bought this house, and I'm going to throw you out.
Do you hear that, Aunt Aggie? Mr. Maxwell bought our house.
Well, Miss Judy, that real estate man's back again.
Oh, come in, Mr. Goff.
Miss Canova, about that house I bought for you, I forgot to tell you where it is. Here's the address.
Mr. Goff, why, he sold me this house. What house did you buy, Miss Canova?
Gee, well, we bought your house.
My house? Hey, now we're right back where we started. What are we going to do about it?
Well, I don't know what you're going to do about it, but I got to get back to my practicing.
Oh, not that! Not that! Not that!
Folks, we all have dreams, some of them good and some of them bad. But there's one dream we all share with our loved ones in the armed forces who are still overseas. The dream of the time to come when we can all be together again. I'll buy that dream. Imagine me with my head on your shoulder and you with your lips getting bolder. A sky full of moon and a sweet mellow tune. Imagine me in a gown, bright and flowery, and you thanking Dad for my dowry. A
church full of folks and those last minute jokes. I'll buy that dream, a honeymoon in Cairo and a brand new auto gyro. Then home by rocket and a wing. We'll settle down near Dallas in a little plastic palace. It's not as crazy as you think. Imagine me on our first anniversary with someone like you in the nursery. It doesn't sound bad, and if it can be had,
I'll buy that dream. A honeymoon in Cairo in a brand new auto gyro, then home by rocket in a wing. We'll settle down near Dallas in a little plastic palace. It's not as crazy as you think.
Imagine me on our first anniversary with someone like you in the nursery. It doesn't sound bad, and if it can be had, I'll buy that dream.
I'll buy that dream.
This is Vern Smith asking you to follow the 14-day Palmolive plan for a lovelier complexion. And don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder night and morning and before every date. Good news, ladies. More points for used fats. Yes, you now get 4 points a pound for your used cooking fat. 4 instead of 2. Those extra points will help you buy choice cuts of meat. Why has Uncle Sam increased the points for cooking fat? It's because there is an alarming shortage in industrial fats. So in order to hurry along wonderful peacetime products, do save all the cooking fat you can. If needed in the manufacture of nylons, electric appliances, upholstery, textiles, baby carriages, and hundreds of other articles. And don't forget, soap requires a colossal amount of fat. You can speed up soap supplies by saving every possible drop of fat. You will, won't you? Remember, your butcher now pays you 4 cents and 4 points for every pound of cooking fat. Now, here's Judy.
Folks, it was awfully nice being with you tonight, and I hope we'll all be together again next Saturday night. In the meantime, please don't forget the two products that bring us together each week, Palmolive soap and Colgate tooth powder, the bestest in the world. This is Judy Canova from Hollywood saying, good night, soldier, wherever you may be. My heart lonely without you.
The Judy Canova Show is written by Fred Fox and Henry Hoople.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.